Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, February 15th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Council Majority Moves on Water Planning. Council member cites city staff expertise as reason to support. By Stuart Doreen. It took a while, but the Midland City Council approved an agreement with Park Hill to provide engineering support and other services for water the City of Midland owns near Fort Stockton. In the end, council members said they need to trust city staff and continue with a plan to eventually bring water from Pecos County. The additional water, it was stated, will add to the City of Midland's water resources and will help the city when it comes to negotiating water rights with the Colorado River Municipal Water District. The City of Midland currently receives 75% of its water from the CRMWD, 17.5 million gallons a day, and the CRMWD contract ends at the end of the decade. 2030 is right around the corner, Mayor Lori Blong said. Slowing down hurts bargaining position with CRMWD, Councilman Jack Ladd added. The problem to the item came when council members Amy Stretcher-Burks and Dan Corrales expressed concerns about the information that has come out, or lack thereof, in their opinion. There were calls for more time to discuss the issue in executive session, although some council members told Corrales and Burks they welcomed the discussion in open session. Utilities Director Carl Crago said the agreement approved will allow city officials to start working on a right-of-way plan, especially as Park Hill has personnel that the city worked with when the pipeline to the T-Bar pipeline was created. The council's action Tuesday will help city staff find a route for a future pipeline from Fort Stockton to the city, Crago said. T-Bar is so expensive because they didn't look for a route before needing it, Crago said. I don't want to be in that situation. The water near Fort Stockton is related to a deal the city made in May 2020 with Fort Stockton Holdings. The first contract lasts through 2070, and there are a pair of 20-year extensions. The contract requires the city to pay $1.4 million a year initially for water rights. That amount increases to around $2 million in a couple of years. Crago said afterward that the total cost of a pipeline and other needs that go into bringing water from the Fort Stockton area to Midland could be between $300 million and $400 million. In the end, the council made a decision to act Tuesday and approve the item when Robin Poole and John Norman stated that Crago was the expert on this matter and that they put their trust in city staff. The two then joined Scott Dufford, Blong, and Ladd in voting for the item. The City of Midland also owns water from the T-Bar Ranch in Winkler County, owns 16.7% of O.H. Ivy Reservoir, which is located 55 miles east of San Angelo, and is a customer, not a member, of the Colorado River Municipal Water District. The city operates as a take-or-pay customer based on the CRMWD contract. If you're not looking into that distance, then you could be in water trouble. And there's cities all over Texas that are in water trouble, Crago said after the meeting. They don't have enough sources. We want to ensure that we have a surplus of sources. This article is entitled, Texas Probes Targa's Failure to Report Gas Release, by David Weth, Zachary Miter, and Aaron Clark, Bloomberg. Texas is investigating why pipeline operator Targa Resources Corporation failed to report an unexpected release of tons of natural gas within 24 hours, as required by state regulations. Targa disclosed the incident 2 weeks after it happened, and within 8 hours after Bloomberg emailed the Houston-based company a satellite image that appears to show a significant cloud of methane near one of its compressor stations in Midland County, Texas. The January 20th incident, in the heart of the Permian Basin, the world's largest shale oil field, wasn't reported to state regulators until 4:42 p.m. local time on February 3rd. Companies operating in Texas must promptly notify regulators when a malfunction causes the release of more hazardous pollutants than permits allow. The energy industry is under pressure to control emission releases because methane, the primary component of natural gas, has a particularly devastating impact on the climate. Fossil fuel firms that can't control emissions risk playing a diminished role in the energy transition as buyers increasingly seek producers with cleaner records. Targa said the January incident happened when the station's compressors shut down unexpectedly due to a broken belt, according to its February filing to the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. To avoid a dangerous buildup of pressure, safety valves released gas directly into the atmosphere between 10:13 a.m. and 1:33 p.m. The release matched the timing and location of two satellite observations that appeared to show methane spewing from near the company's Germania compressor station. The U.S. Geological Survey's Landsat 8 satellite observed a plume of gas at 11:21 a.m., and the European Space Agency's Sentinel 2 satellite detected a release at 11:36 a.m., according to Kairos SAS. The Geoanalytics Agency estimated the emissions rate of the plume at 21 metric tons an hour. Targa said in a statement to Bloomberg that it released 10 tons of methane during repairs. That's equal to the short-term climate impact of the annual emissions of more than 150 U.S. cars. Targa didn't answer additional questions, including why it failed to initially report the event to regulators. Owners and operators of regulated entities in Texas must submit initial notifications to the state regulator within 24 hours of discovery if an emission event exceeds reportable quantities. Final reports must be submitted within 2 weeks. The investigation of the Targa incident is ongoing, the Texas regulator said in a statement. Based on the results of an investigation of a reportable incident, the TCEQ may pursue enforcement actions, when appropriate, against regulated entities, which may include the assessment of a penalty. In the U.S., operators are set to face fines from the Environmental Protection Agency through rules that will take effect next year if their methane emissions exceed limits, with an initial fee starting at $900 per metric ton. Targa is the second fossil fuel operator to disclose emissions containing methane to regulators after Bloomberg shared satellite images with the companies that appeared to show releases of the potent greenhouse gas near their assets. New approaches to processing high-resolution observations from public satellites are allowing scientists to detect and attribute methane emissions with far greater precision. This article is entitled Permian Basin Food Summit Educates Community, Rebuilds Economy by Morgan Taylor Thomas. With a somewhat barren environment, Permian Basin-grown food can be hard to facilitate and find, causing the farm-to-market trading value to negatively affect the local economy, forcing prices to exceed affordability, etc. However, a dedicated group of West Texas food producers, crafters, and activists joined forces and created a day-long networking event known as the Permian Basin Local Food Summit. There, business owners and community members alike will learn how to rebuild the local food system through shared knowledge, support, and employment relationships. "There's a lot more farmers out there than people realize," Ryan Minshew, owner of Minshew Made, told the Reporter Telegram. "When the food shortage hit, people didn't know where to go, but there were still a lot of these farms that were able to grow food." With a green thumb since day one, Minshew grew up gardening in his Denver City hometown. While he and his wife Kayla lived in the Panhandle, the couple gardened frequently, growing greens and getting their feet wet in the local farmer's market scene. After moving to Midland in 2012, the Minshews made the farm a family affair by involving their kids, Colton and Briley. Frequent flyers at the downtown Midland Farmers Market and other pop-ups around town, Ryan and Kayla observe how much knowledge and understanding fellow community members lack in terms of homegrown produce. When 2020 hit, it changed a lot of things for a lot of people, and a lot of people started gardening. But we realized there was a chance for us to start showing people and helping people with what little bit we knew already, Ryan explained. Peppers, tomatoes, squash, cucumbers, salad kale, broccoli, and cabbage make up just a few of the items found at the Minshew farm. Yet, more plant species means more work when challenges like climate come rolling in. When last year's records proved to be exceptionally hot and dry, Minshew explained how the family adjusted daily chores such as rotating shade cloths and watering schedules in order to save their crops. Now, a small-scale farm veteran, Ryan will present a display on getting started in food production, crafting, vending at Thursday's Food Summit in Stanton. Hoping to walk away with more education and connections than before, Minshew knows the event is just a stepping stone in getting the Permian Basin headed in a regrowth stage. Other topics include a local meat production and processing panel with Midland Meat Company owner John Scarborough, using local products for meals, banquets, and community with Chef John Vandergraaf from Midland Meat Company, and using social media for growing your sales with Midlander Barbara Cox. At a glance, what? Permian Basin Local Food Summit. When? 9:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Thursday. Where? Martin County Community Center, Stanton. This article is entitled Affidavit: Odessan Charged with Murder of Pregnant Woman, by Mercedes Cordero. A 24-year-old Odessa man is facing a murder charge after being arrested Monday in connection with a fatal shooting of 39-year-old Tamika Yishan Jackson, according to court documents. Israel Yanez II, 24, was being held in Midland County Jail on Tuesday on a first-degree charge of murder. Bond has been set at $1 million. Midland County Sheriff's Office deputies responded Monday at about 10:36 a.m. to the Quick Track convenience store located at 13920 West Highway 80 in Midland County in reference to a shots fired call. Upon arrival, deputies began to render aid to a gunshot victim, later identified as Jackson. She was transported to Medical Center Hospital in Odessa, where she died at about 11:29 a.m., according to an arrest affidavit. A witness told investigators that a man in a camouflage hoodie with the hoodie pulled over, a black mask, and gray-colored pants, later identified as Yanez, entered the convenience store, pointed a gun at Jackson, and began shooting. After shooting Jackson, he fled on foot, according to an arrest affidavit. Surveillance footage showed Jackson and the witness behind the store counter speaking before Yanez entered the store and pulled a gun out of his left pocket. The footage captured Jackson falling to the floor and the witness screaming. Yanez was also seen fleeing the scene, according to an arrest affidavit. The witness told investigators that Yanez was Jackson's boyfriend, but were fighting because Jackson was pregnant, according to the arrest affidavit. Investigators found text messages on Jackson's phone between her and Yanez. According to the arrest affidavit, Yanez sent Jackson at about 7:20 a.m. a screenshot of a Facebook post that Jackson had shared. He then sent a message that included, "You don't want me. You envy and hate me and don't want me. I'ma just wipe you off the map. And you gonna be on 80 or what? So I can go and end all of this mess." Jackson replied that she was at the 80 location. Later that day, the Odessa Police Department conducted a traffic stop in the area of 2455 Kermit Highway for a traffic violation. The driver was identified as Yanez. He was then arrested, according to the arrest affidavit. This article is entitled "Congressman August Pfluger Honors Susie Hitchcock Hall" by the Midland Reporter-Telegram. Congressman August Pfluger honored Susie Hitchcock Hall of Susie's South 40 Confections for her incredible candy manufacturing facility in downtown Midland. "Susie Hitchcock Hall is a Midland treasure," Pfluger offered in a statement. "Susie's South 40 is designed to educate, and she takes pride in her work taking children from the entire region and teaching them about investing in equipment and people, marketing and design and retail, while making it fun and relatable. It was my pleasure to present her with a congressional cookbook to commemorate her hard work and impact on our community. And while there, I couldn't help but shop for all four of my Valentines, Camille and our girls." This article is entitled "Commissioner Ramsey Elected to Urban Counties Board" by Ben Schaffer. Midland County Commissioner Scott Ramsey has been elected as a board member of the Texas Conference on Urban Counties, according to a county press release. According to its website, the Texas Conference of Urban Counties is a nonprofit organization composed of 34 member counties that represent approximately 79% of the population of Texas. The Conference of Urban Counties supports and coordinates communications among member counties, studies policies and programs of the state of Texas that affect urban counties, advocates county issues, primarily at the state level, and provides training and education programs appropriate for urban county officials. All services and activities are pursued for the benefit of the people of Texas. The Texas Conference of Urban Counties Board of Directors is responsible for directing the business of the association and plays a meaningful role in providing leadership on legislative and policy issues for the 34 member counties. The press release states that the central focus of the CUC is the ability of county government to provide essential and necessary services at the lowest cost possible. They serve as an advocate on county government issues and develops cooperative programs that generate savings by combining the purchasing power and market influence of multiple counties. The association also provides educational opportunities that are tailored to the needs of urban county judges and commissioners. Ramsey was first elected to Precinct 1 in 2016, according to the county. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled "Oil Workers Expect Pay Raises Amid Talent Shortage" by David Weth, Bloomberg. Soaring pay for oil workers around the globe is expected to continue climbing amid a shortage for talent that has some fielding multiple job offers in a single year, according to a recent survey. It's a big switch from last year's Global Energy Talent Index, which showed that most oil workers had yet to cash bigger paychecks. Despite the run-up in crude prices, and were ready to leave the oil patch altogether. The sentiment of oil and gas workers has completely changed from a year ago, said Jeanette Marks, chief executive officer for AirSwift, a global recruiting firm, in its seventh year releasing the survey, which closed in November. People are feeling a bit more settled, and they're feeling happier where they're at, and that's making them want to stay. The U.S. shale patch in particular is struggling to find enough workers to drill, frack, and map underground deposits of crude as President Joe Biden calls for more output in order to bring down gasoline prices. The most recent government data showed that pay growth in December jumped the most in almost two decades, while the unemployment rate tumbled to a record low. Looking ahead, the resurgence of the energy sector has translated into more optimism over compensation. Two-thirds of workers expect salaries to rise over the next year, compared with 54% in last year's survey. Some 41% of workers expect pay to grow by more than 5% this year. Hiring managers see even bigger gains. Among the survey's other key takeaways, 80% of respondents in the AirSwift survey said they had been approached for another job over the past year. An increasing number of workers in the power and renewables sectors said they're willing to switch to oil. Out of a list of 10 factors affecting job satisfaction, pay had the biggest impact at 51%, followed by benefits and having the opportunity to work on exciting projects. This article is entitled OPEC Sees Tighter Oil Market on More Demand by Grant Smith, Bloomberg. OPEC expects a slightly tighter global oil market than previously forecast as the group nudged up its demand estimate and trimmed its supply outlook. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries raised its projection for the amount of crude it will need to pump this year by 250,000 barrels a day to an average of 29.42 million a day, it said in a monthly report. Based on OPEC's current output rates, markets are set to be broadly balanced this year. The OPEC Plus Alliance has indicated it plans to stick with production quotas fixed late last year for the rest of 2023. Even as China's economy reopens and Russia cuts output in retaliation for Western sanctions. The United Arab Emirates energy minister reiterated on Tuesday that world crude markets are balanced as rising demand in some regions is countered by a slowdown elsewhere. Key to oil demand growth in 2023 will be the return of China from its mandated mobility restrictions, OPEC said. Concern hovers around the depth and pace of the country's economic recovery. Global oil consumption will increase by 2.3 million barrels a day, or 100,000 a day more than projected a month ago, to an average of 101.87 million barrels a day this year, OPEC said. OPEC reduced its estimate for supplies outside the group in 2023 by 150,000 barrels a day to 67 million barrels a day. OPEC's 13 members pumped an average of 28.88 million barrels a day in January. Little change from the previous month, the report showed. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, February 15th. Ashley Nicole Dill. It is with great sorrow we announce the passing of Ashley Nicole Dill of Midland. She went to be with the Lord at the age of 36 on January 30th. Ashley passed away surrounded by her loved ones after her battle with cancer. She was born on September 29, 1986, to Tracy Michelle Coker and Alan Hinnant in Salem, Oregon. Ashley is survived by her children, Bailey, Brooklyn, and Jackson, husband Justin Dill, mother Lori Powell, her sisters Kaylee and Destiny, as well as many other family members. She is preceded in death by her mother Tracy and uncle Danny. Ashley's memorial will be held for close friends and family on Saturday, February 18th at 10 a.m. at the Living Way Church of Midland. Any floral offerings need to be delivered to the church. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to Cash App at $BrooklynDill to help her children during this difficult time. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Clarence David Young. Clarence David Young, 84, of Midland, entered peacefully into heaven February 12th. Clarence was born January 1, 1939, to James and Mamie Cameron Young in Harlingen. Clarence is survived by his wife Nancy of Midland, daughters Becky Beatty and husband Brian of Midland, and Kathy Young Borden of Louisville, 6 grandchildren, and sister Hazel Barmfind of San Antonio. Clarence is preceded in death by his father James Young, mother Mamie Young, and brothers George and James Young. The family will receive guests on Wednesday, February 15th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Graveside service will be held on Thursday, February 16th at 11 a.m. at Rest Haven Cemetery. Celebration of Life will be held on Thursday, February 16th at 2 p.m. at St. Luke's United Methodist Church. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Home Hospice in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. James Clinton Carroll. James Clinton Carroll's earthly journey ended on February 5, 2023. Clinton was born into the loving family of Ross, Oscar, and Frances Carroll on January 3, 1940, in Quanah, Texas. Clarence was preceded in death by both his parents, Ross, Oscar, and Frances Carroll, and 2 of his brothers, Billy Carroll and Leon Carroll. Clinton was survived by his loving wife, Olinda Carroll, and 2 brothers, Howard Carroll and Larry Carroll. His 5 children, Michelle and Tony Elkins, Jackie and Jason Russell, James and Crystal Carroll, Rachel and Ken Suter, Vicky and Rowdy Arnold, as well as 12 grandchildren and 15 great-grandchildren. Service and burial will be held on February 18th at 2 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland. Jonathan John Lewis France. Jonathan Lewis France was born June 1, 1979, in Manistee, Michigan. He passed away in November 2022 after a short but rough battle with cancer. We find comfort that he is no longer suffering, and he was welcomed in heaven by his grandparents, Fred and Jackie France, Ray and Jenny Collins, and his oldest brother, Michael France. He leaves behind his parents, Fred and Linda France, his siblings, brother and sister-in-law, Dwayne and Tanya France, sister and brother-in-law, Cynthia and Chris Gomez Brooks, as well as many nieces and nephews. There will not be a formal service. However, if you wish to honor him, please make a contribution to the American Cancer Society or Midland's Allison Cancer Center. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Noxine Clack, January 23, 1928 to February 13, 2023. Noxine Campbell Clack passed away Monday, February 13th at home in Odessa after a brief illness. She had celebrated her 95th birthday 3 weeks earlier. Noxine was born in Anson, Texas on January 23, 1928 to Knox Campbell and Grace Pierce Campbell. Noxine is predeceased by her parents, her brother Thomas Campbell, her sister Elizabeth Roy, her son Gene Clack, and her former husbands James H. Clack and Oscar Halsell. Noxine is survived by her daughter Cynthia Clack and partner Randall Schaefer of Odessa, her son Steve Clack and wife Nelwyn of Kerrville, her daughter-in-law Sandra Clack of Canyon, as well as her many grandchildren and great-grandchildren. A visitation will be held at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home in Odessa on Thursday, February 16th from 5 to 6:30 p.m. A memorial service will be held at Westminster Presbyterian Church in Odessa on Saturday, February 25th at 2 p.m., followed by a celebration of life at Cynthia Clack's home in Odessa. The family requests that in lieu of flowers, donations may be made to Westminster Presbyterian Church Food Pantry, Basin PBS, or a charity of your choice. Death Notices. Brenda Perryman. Brenda Perryman, 78, of Midland, passed away February 11th. Celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, February 17th at Grace Presbyterian Church in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com. Carol Ann Elrod. Carol Ann Elrod, 77, of Midland, passed away February 10th. The family will hold a service at a later date. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com. Kent D. Stokes. Kent D. Stokes, 62, of Midland, passed away February 13th. The family will announce service arrangements at a later date. Matthew Hermanson. Matthew Hermanson, 29, of Midland, passed away February 10th. The service is pending at this time. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com.
This is Thoris with the Odessa American Newspaper for Wednesday, February the 15th. Headlines: Commissioners approve library devices. Sheriff to use recruitment service for jail. The Ector County Commissioners Court approved a more than $540,000 grant for 1,000 devices for the Ector County Library on Tuesday. Ector County Library Director Howard Marks presented to the court $548,100 grant from T-Mobile, which provided 1,000 devices to the library. Those devices are 200 iPads, 200 Samsung tablets, 200 Chromebooks, and 400 hotspots. Marks also explained all 1,000 devices belong to the library. This is a tremendous opportunity for our community, for Ector County, and for the citizens who don't have access to those devices to go in and check them out like a book, Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett said after the meeting. They really are similar to a book and that they provide education when used correctly, which is what these devices are set up for. This is a great service for our community. We saw with COVID and with at-home schooling the need for upgrading our technology. In addition to approving the devices, the court also okayed the library to allow all vetted authors and artists that present at the library to be able to sell their books and artwork. Fawcett said during the meeting, "This agenda item sounds like a good plan." Marks echoed Fawcett's statement after the meeting, and he said this opportunity is giving him a wealth of ideas about what the library can do moving forward. We have lots of space for artists to display their works, Mark said. We could have art shows. We could use the courtyard. We could set it up in the spring and summer. We could have artists outside. We could have them in the parking lot or in the park. There's plenty of potential for art shows. The court also approved accepting a $5,000 grant from the Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin for a book drop in West Odessa. The library was also approved to enter a new agreement with Hoopla Database. The library has been with Hoopla since November of 2021, and Mark said the new agreement would allow the library to expand its section for older adults. He said the database is currently packed with material for young adults. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths was approved to use commissionary funds to pay for contract services to help staff the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. The contract service is called Advanced Recruitment Solutions. Griffiths told the Odessa American on Tuesday morning the ECLEC is short 80 jailers. He also said that a total of 165 jailers is full staff. Griffiths also said during the meeting this contract service was also used by Midland County to staff its jail. Apparently, they are very effective, Griffiths said after the meeting. It's a position-specific recruitment. It's been very effective for Midland County, and we don't have to use taxpayer money to try it out. That's the best thing about it. As of Tuesday morning, Ector County has 59 inmates being housed in other counties. There are 31 in Brewster County, 11 in Mitchell County, 9 in Hudspeth County, and 8 in Garza County. West Texas plans to beat any admission offer for students. West Texas A&M University will aggressively try to counter any offer potential students get from other schools under the terms of a new program announced February the 12th by West Texas President Walter B. Wendler. Through West Texas Beat Any Offer Deal, prospective students can submit their admission offers for other institution of higher learning to WT, and WT will do everything in our power to beat the offer, Wendler wrote in a guest essay first published in the Amarillo Globe News. Give us a chance to help make your education affordable, Wendler wrote. We will go to work on your behalf to help you save money based on the net out-of-pocket costs for your education. Full details are available at wtamu.edu/beat-any-offer. Wendler emphasized that this offer is made not because of WT's enrollment rates, which once again are on the rise, but instead is an act of intense pride. We are proud of the Texas Panhandle and West Texas A&M University, Wendler wrote. WT is committed to providing an excellent educational experience at an affordable cost. It is our commitment and duty as a regional institution. We are confident in the quality of our academic offerings and the personal fulfillment that students find here. Wendler believes so strongly in West Texas that he devised the program in an effort to go after top quality students around the region, the state, and the country. We are so confident in our quality and our price point that we want to compete for every student in the country, Wendler elaborated. We believe that what WT offers is so attractive that we can both keep the most promising Panhandle area students, but also bring in the best from around the nation and then entice them to remain in this region. The average cost for tuition and fees at WT is $9,202 for 15 undergraduate hours for in-state students and $11,376 for out-of-state students. That already compares favorably to other schools, according to figures compiled by the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board. Students have a lot of choices when it comes to obtaining their higher education, said Mike Knox, WT Vice President for Enrollment Management. We want to help students make wise decisions when it comes to how that choice impacts their financial well-being. We are proud of the value we provide, and we look forward to assisting as many students as we can. Wendler frequently speaks on issues related to student debt, encouraging prospective students to look very carefully at educational costs and make side-by-side comparisons to keep expenses and borrowing as low as possible. Recruiting and retaining the very best is the number one principle of the university's long-range plan, WT125, from the Panhandle to the world. That plan is fueled by the historic $125 million One West Comprehensive Fundraising Campaign. To date, the five-year campaign, which publicly launched in September of 2021, has raised more than $115 million. Full agenda on tap for City Council on Tuesday. The Odessa City Council plans to discuss a wide variety of topics during its work session and council meeting Tuesday, and recycling, roads, hens, a sports complex, and an $862,000 ODC agreement are among them. During the council's workshop meeting, which is scheduled for 3 p.m. in council chambers, City Engineer Yervan Mayakyan will talk to the council about the possibility of using a pavement restoration technique instead of seal coating 21 miles of the city's streets at a cost of $647,451. According to Mayakyan, the product that would be used would cut the city's preventative maintenance program cost in half per square foot and offers a good service life. It is designed to be applied to low-volume streets, and our intent is to use it on many of the streets that have not been seal-coated or have not been sealed in several years. Hamakan also wants to ask the city for $628,459 for an asphalt sealer that he says would extend the life of pavement for several years. In other road-related matters, Assistant City Manager Aaron Smith plans to suggest amending the city's 2020 Master Thoroughfare Plan. He wants to eliminate the connection of the Desert Ridge subdivision to the Sunset Heights neighborhood and the connection of Dawn to Yukon. According to documents submitted to the council, Smith said he thinks there's sufficient access to the neighborhood via 52nd Street and Grandview, and eliminating the connections would make the neighborhood safer. Odessa Department Corporation Chairman Chris Crow also plans to talk about a proposed economic development agreement with Taylor Sutton Services. Taylor, a family-owned heavy-duty equipment company that is nearly 100 years old, wants to spend $2.4 million to expand their current facility on Interstate 20 by adding an 18-bay maintenance facility, a paint booth, and more office space, according to Crow. Once done, the company would add 24 full-time jobs to its current staff of 31. The ODC has already approved a five-year, $862,579 grant and now needs council approval. The council is also scheduled to discuss amending the city ordinances so people can own up to 4 backyard hens. Under the proposed ordinance, the hens would have to be in an enclosed structure with 3 or more sides and a cover. It would also have to have a floor and a door that would allow them to move back and forth between the coop and an enclosed yard. In addition, the coop couldn't be closer than 50 feet from any property lines or be seen from the street, and it would have to be made of decay-resistant wood, readily movable and maintained in a good, sound, and clean condition. Hay, grain, feed, and all other food sources would have to be stored in secure containers, and it couldn't be fed on the ground, according to the proposed ordinance. The city would charge $25 for a backyard hen permit and a multiple pet permit, and $15 for wing clipping. During the council's regular meeting, which starts at 6 p.m., the council is scheduled to discuss hiring a new marketing company for the ODC, Current Media Partners, at cost of $400,000 annually. CMP has already been working on a marketing plan with a suggested tagline of Only Odessa. One of the founders of the company, Christy Calacotti, told the ODC board last week they want to make sure manufacturing, logistical, carbon capture, renewable energy, and mining companies know Odessa is the only place they want to locate to. They've looked at marketing efforts in Amarillo, Abilene, Lubbock, Tyler, Austin, and Frisco to make sure they can set Odessa apart, Calacote said. Public Works Director Tom Kerr is also scheduled to update the council on a meeting he had with BRI Recycling Services. BRI, which has had a contract with the city for roughly 20 years, is no longer willing to continue processing the recyclables from the 300-plus bins placed around the city at schools and commercial businesses like DK convenience stores. The company informed the city roughly 50% of the materials in the recycling bins is contaminated. In 2018, China decided it wouldn't accept materials unless the contamination rate was 0.5%. Up until that point, 40% of the United States paper, plastics, and other recyclables went to China. India, too, has tightened its standards. For example, it has 1% contamination rate on mixed paper imports. The city council disposes roughly 100,000 tons of garbage a year and about 700 tons of recyclables. According to Kerr, the city now has three options. It can discontinue recycling services, it can scale back recycling to just the Time Machine location, or it can scale back recycling to the Time Machine location and a few community collection sites. If either of the last two options are chosen, all of the locations would be fenced and gated so the site and materials could be monitored to significantly limit contamination. The city is also set to discuss hiring Synergy Sports Global for $15,000 to conduct a sports complex feasibility study. The company, which also develops and manages multi-sports facilities and recreation areas, helped create a $25 million sports complex in Heath, a $125 million complex in Colorado, and a $40 million project in New Jersey. According to a PowerPoint presentation they gave the Parks and Recreation Board, Synergy would study the area's demographics and socioeconomics, sports participation rates, competitors, the size and components of the city's courts and fields, possible partnerships, and construction costs. They would also determine potential sites and create an operating budget. Calls and an email to interim city manager Agapito Bernal for this story were not returned. The city council will be meeting in executive session to discuss a lawsuit that was filed against the city in February of 2022. The families of two teens, Kanan Gage Garms, 19, and Evan James Hill, 18, are suing the city, claiming they were killed in a wreck caused by an obstructed stop sign. According to the lawsuit, Garms was driving a Ford F-150 North on Clover Avenue on September 19, 2020, when he failed to see the stop sign at 52nd Street because it was blocked by vegetation and his truck collided with a GMC Terrain being driven by Andrew Jacob Nading, 19. Garms and Hill, who were both in the Ford, were killed, as was Nading. D. Morion Bruek, 18, who was in the Ford, and Benjamin Matthew Luna, who was in the GMC, sustained grave injuries, the lawsuit stated. The families of Garms and Hill, along with Bruex and Luna, allege in their lawsuit numerous accidents had happened at the same intersection because of the obstructed sign, and the city of Odessa was aware of that. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a video taken at 2:52 a.m. that day showed an unidentified black car run the stop sign as it traveled at a very high rate of speed going north on Clover Avenue and crossing East 52nd Street. Almost immediately after, the Ford is seen chasing the black car at a high rate of speed and running the stop sign. As the Ford entered the intersection, the GMC, which was also traveling at a high rate of speed on 52nd Street, crossed the intersection, the report stated. The front end of the GMC struck the driver's side of the Ford, and both vehicles proceeded toward the northeast corner of the intersection. Commissioners to discuss library items. Ector County Library Director Howard Marks is set to have a busy day in front of the Ector County Commissioner's Court. Marks is scheduled to discuss five items, including accepting a $548,100 grant from T-Mobile with one full year of service for 600 tablets and 400 hotspots, vetting authors and artists that present at the library to be able to sell their books and artwork, and accepting a $5,000 grant from the Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin for a book drop in West Odessa. Marks explained that vetting authors and artists that present at the library wanted to sell some artwork. Heidi Petrie wanted to sell some of her artwork during her exhibit of A Permanent Record. The library director said Petrie wanted to give part of her sales to the library, but Mark said the library isn't allowed to receive the profits from sold items. Marks also explained the county would need to decide what would be done with those funds if those authors and artists were allowed to sell their books or artwork. I'd like the library to be able to hold on to a portion of the proceeds to be able to put back into future programs, Mark said. I'd like the library to start building its own funds for bringing in bigger programs for the future. These agenda items and others will be heard at 10 a.m. Tuesday at the Ector County Administration Building Annex, located in room 120 at 1010 East 8th Street in Odessa. The other two agenda items for Mark include approving a cellular phone and monthly service plan and agreement extending contract for Hoopla database. The library began using Hoopla in November of 2021. Marks explained there is going to be a revised contract with Hoopla to allow the library to grow its catalog. Marks met with the Odessa American last week about the $548,100 grant from T-Mobile that provided 1,000 devices to the library. Those devices are 200 iPads, 200 Samsung tablets, 200 Chromebooks, and 400 hotspots. The 1,000 devices were paid for by a third round of emergency connectivity funding. The grant from the FCC totals $548,100. The court will also consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to receive a presentation from Lisa Sertuch from the Elections Department in regards to the new department equipment. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve an advanced homicide investigation training class in Gatlinburg, Tennessee, for Lieutenant Randy Domineski. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve mileage reimbursement for ROW inspectors. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve all vetted authors and artists that present at the library to be able to sell their books and artwork. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve an additional $100 charge for out-of-state marriage applications. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve an application and resolution for the VOCA grant number 3978903 with the Office of the Governor for the Ector County District Attorney's Office and authorize the county judge, county clerk, and county commissioners to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to accept $548,100 grant from T-Mobile, part of the COVID emergency connectivity funds, with one full year of service for 600 tablets, 400 hotspots deployed to us. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve a cellular phone and monthly service plan for Library Director Howard Marks, pertaining to and in connection with agenda item number 7. consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to accept a $5,000 grant from the Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin for a book drop in West Odessa. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding a new agreement, extended contract, for Hoopla database, and authorize the county judge to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to update an existing contract with Mitchell County for housing inmates, should the situation arise, and authorize the county judge to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to receive a presentation from Jennifer Edwards at Johnson Controls Incorporated regarding Year One Measurement and Verification Services. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding the cancellation of the measurement and verification services from Johnson Controls included under the performance contract, and to make that cancellation retroactive effective November the 1st, 2022, and authorize the county judge to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve a budget amendment to General Fund, County Clerk, Office Supplies, 001-160-5171, from Unreserved Fund Balance, 001-3310, for $2,600, and authorize the county judge and county clerk to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve a budget amendment to Self-Funded Liability Fund, Auto Liability, 032-960-5367, and to Auto Premiums, 032-4403, for $40,768, and authorize the county judge and county clerk to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve both a Microsoft license for planning and development and a budget amendment to Sales Tax Fund Planning and Development Subscriptions, 005-025-5207, and to Interest Earnings, 005-4161, for $470, and authorize the county judge and county clerk to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve a budget amendment to Sales Tax Fund, Jail, Contract Services, 005-420-5309, from Unreserved Fund Balance, 005-3310, for $14,995, and authorize the county judge and county clerk to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve a budget amendment to Sales Tax Fund, Sheriff Contract Services, 005-360-5309, from Unreserved Fund Balance, 005-3310, for $20,000, and authorize the county judge and county clerk to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve an increase in the change fund amount for the detention center to $5,000. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve the Ector County Investment Report for the quarter ending December the 31st, 2022. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve the Accounts Payable Fund Requirements Report for February 14th, 2023, and review county financial statements and reports.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.